Ben.
Hey, how are you?
Good, how are you?
This is a Bonfoil, the podcast for everyone flying just above the surface. Pump, carb, soar, let's foil!
Welcome to episode number 48 of Up on Foil. Today, again, with Gwen Le Tutour. And let me, for those who didn't listen to the last episode, introduce us real quick. Hey, Matt, I'm mostly pump foiling, often para-winging at the moment. And with me is Gwen Le Tutour. He's the tutor, the guy who actually teaches so many of us. And thanks very much, Gwen, to be back on the show. If you want to learn more about what how he came into water sports and foiling, check out the other episode. Today, we're going to just talk about like your last year. You went to do paragliding and you recently came back from Hawaii where you did the paddle races, which is super exciting. So thanks very much, Gwen, to come back on the show. Super cool.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. It's been, I think last year we were together was, like a year ago?
Almost, yeah. Yeah.
And yeah, I really feel like a lot has changed, you know, in the sports, like, you know, so many new things, like you mentioned, like, you know, powering. I think a lot of people have, like, changed, you know, the way they ride. And opportunities to like, you know, enjoy the water. So when did you get into the powering?
I think it was in the beginning of this year. I tried to paddle, but I really struggled. And then I was with Michi, with Roham and Baltz, Ridiculo. And I got to test the ENSYS, the Roger V1, and it was so much easier. So I basically stopped paddling. And I just like 2 weeks ago, I did this para-wing comparison where I had eight brands that I compared. And it's actually going to be a version two of that because there were brands saying, why didn't you take ours? So I think in October, it's going to be like a version two of that with all the rest. And we're going to talk about the Bahia as well. So this double skin pairing from BRM. But let's talk about you, Gwen. You just came back from Hawaii and you did... Did you do all three paddle races?
I did two of them. I did Paddle Limoa and M2M. And so there is a third race, you know, in Triple Crown, M2O. Unfortunately, like M2O, you know, right now is, I feel like, a really expensive race to get into because it's the one race out of the three that requires you to have your own safety boat. So it's, you know, one boat per person. And so adding on that cost is massive. It's basically, you have to count about $2,000 for the day. Wow. To have a boat, you know, like a safety boat with you. So, you know, I think it's kind of like out of my budget for like racing. So didn't do that one. But still M2M is a crossing, Maui to Molokai. So, you know, that's like a really exciting race. And then Paddle Limoa is a long, like it's on Maui on the North Shore, and it's the Maliko run basically. And that is maybe not as much as an adventure because, you know, when you go to Maui, the Maliko run is the run that everybody does. So like when I went there, like we pretty much were doing the Maliko run like several times a day.
Really?
And so then you kind of like race that course. So what happened actually when I signed up, I signed up for Paddle Limoa and M2M on the paddle. And then later I found out that they were opening a new category for Paddle Limoa, the Power Wing category. And so then I was like, oh, you know, that would be really cool to actually swap for the Power Wing in Paddle Limoa, especially because that's the like I said, Maliko, we do it every day. So it's like, might as well switch it up and do something a bit different, you know? So yeah, I did Paddle Limoa on the power wing and M2M on the paddle. It was my first time downwinding in Hawaii. So I would say, you know, there was a lot of like, learning, you know, the thing with downwinding is, you know, you ride the swell, you ride the bumps and everywhere I've been, it's always a little different. And so, it takes quite a while. I mean, you know, more or less, you know, depending on how quickly you learn and you adapt. But there is always a bit of a learning curve to the local conditions. And, you know, that's also what makes it, you know, really interesting. So I would say, like, you know, I did well, considering, you know, that, you know, like my where I'm at, you know. But I, through the entire trip, I was there for 10 days and I never felt like I had it figured out. Like, sometimes when you're downwind and you know the place really well, you kind of like get into this like flow state. Like, you know, it's like, you know exactly what's going to happen. You like, you know, you move through the water super efficiently and you connect everything and it just feels like, you know, flowing, you know, so well. I never got to that place. You know, I was always working to understand it. And so, yeah, it was like, it was really fun, really engaging. So fun to be with, I mean, you know, like those races, everybody shows up. So it's like the top riders in the world are all there. So that's like super inspiring. The level is, you know, insanely high. And to be able to ride with, you know, everybody, you know, learn from everybody, you know, that's like, you know, that was an amazing opportunity.
Did you do the practice runs with the other ones as well? Was it like a group thing? Everyone just was just going, going to do that Malika run.
So, you know, I feel like we have like several groups and so you, because of the shuttle and everything, like we kind of like stay with the group we are in. So, you know, I was going to Hawaii with like a group of like six like French guys, you know, we were in the same house. So we were doing shuttles together. So we end up riding together. We don't really end up riding that much. You know, we see everyone, but we don't all ride together like in the same time. And I, for, you know, to practice, like we only really did the Malika run because that's the convenient one. You know, we, you know, I didn't do a crossing like before, you know, because that's a lot more like logistic. So in terms of practice, it was just like every day. The Malika run, but the crossing is different than the Malika run. So it's like when I did M2M, that was brand new to me, you know.
How is it different to the Malika run? Yes, of course, it's a crossing. Is there like groundswell coming in that didn't go around the other part?
Yeah, so it's a channel, you know, between islands, where like Malika is like along the shore. You get, you know, different, you know, even within you know, Maui to Molokai, you get different sections that are like totally different. You know, throughout the run, it's, you know, Malika to Maui to Molokai is 28 miles, I think. And so you go through really like totally different like sections that, you know, can be slower, steeper, faster, you know, more technical, cross, like. You know, when I got to like the last like 5K, it got glassy. There was still bumps, you know, but, you know, glassy because the wind had like shifted offshore while as we were getting like closer to the island. So it was like a constant, like, you know, like actually I didn't see anyone when I raced like Maui to Molokai. Like I was not near anyone during the entire race.
Really?
And people were, you know, if I would look to the, like, kind of like horizon, I would see some riders. But, you know, you are so focused that, you know, your field of vision is really restricted to, like, finding the way in, you know, like, and mostly because of how we go from Maui to Molokai, you pretty much mostly look from straight to your right. You almost never look left. So that's kind of like, that's what you see. And you don't very much look up and see, you know, if someone is running right next to you, and then, you know, you can see them. So what happened actually was like toward the end, I met up with someone and then I realized that I had been kind of like in the groove of like maybe not pushing as much because when you are on your own, you push because it's a race, but you know, it's like it takes like, you know, an hour, like it took me an hour and 45 minutes. You know, it's not like you kind of like, you. It's enough time that like you fall back into, yeah, you fall back into a comfortable zone, you know, a bit pushing, but still comfortable. And then once someone is actually right next to you, you realize like, oh, you know, actually now I'm pushing, you know, now it's hard.
Okay.
But, you know, ultimately, I was really focused on doing my own race and not really worrying about, like, you know, if someone is next to me, like, trying to, like, you know, push, you know, because that's how you make mistakes, ultimately, or at least for me, you know, especially in a new place where I don't exactly understand how the water moves. So my goal was really to not push too much, because ultimately, if you fall, you're going to be slower than if you don't fall, you know. So my goal was, like, don't fall, and so push, you know, as far as you can, you know, in all, like, in a way that you're not going to make a mistake and fall.
And that worked?
Yeah. So I pretty much, you know, didn't make any mistake during M2M. So didn't fall, didn't come down. I had a really good start, probably like my best start I've ever had. Like within 3-5 seconds of the start, I was like up and going. So I was like near the front. I took a different line. I took a bit more outside. So that's why I was like riding alone. But I had a really good start.
Yeah, because they're tactics involved as well. That's what I've heard now. Like, I've listened to different podcasts and videos where they say, yeah, which way did you go? Were you preparing that, or were you just going, all right, I'm going to start and see what happens?
The only tip I got was, you know, take it wide. Don't come in too soon, you know. So that's what I did. But, you know, I was the most outside of everyone I could see. So, you know, I only could see people to my right and pretty far. So I was kind of like questioning if I was too far, if I was taking it too outside or not. So I was, you know, I was coming in, but, you know, I was also worried that I would come in too soon. So I was like in between. And ultimately, I think I took a really good line, and I ended up, you know, in front of people that I didn't really think I would be in front of. So ultimately, I was really happy. There was like, I don't know, about like 150 people racing, and I did like 50 something. So top third for me is with like how much, you know, I had not downwinded for like a month before I went there. And I had never done with it in Hawaii. So I was like, that's a really good result for me.
So were you looking at the other French guys that you were with in the house, or who were you looking at as like a direct, like opponents?
Yeah. I mean, people that, yeah. You know, some, like the group of French guys I was with, like, you know, I was riding with them, like, when we were doing the Malico like practice runs, so I could tell the level. Those are like really good riders, and I was pretty much always finishing last. You know, like when we are practicing the Malico run, you know, with those guys. So in terms of like confidence, you know, I was like, or at least I had no expectation, you know, because I was like, the level is crazy high here. You know, I just need to like do my own race and not worry about, you know, what everyone is doing. So I had like those guys were like kind of like my scale, you know, but then you also have like names that, you know, maybe I had never like been like racing against, but names that we know and that I was like under the impression that, you know, I wouldn't be able to, you know, beat them. So
like who? Come on, you can drop names.
I know some people had like, you know, a bad race and finished behind me. So, you know, I had a good race. So, you know, maybe me on a good day, I can beat them on their bad days, you know.
All right. No names here. What foil did you use? What gear did you use? People are always interested.
Yeah. So I played it, in my opinion, in the way that I rode the foil that I always ride. The 800 Pure from AFS, that's a foil that I've used the most downwinding, so I know it really well. You know, it's kind of like interesting because during the races, a lot of brands, you know, have prototypes. And so it's almost like the majority of the racers are riding prototypes there. So it's interesting to see. But I also feel like it's kind of like, you know, to me, the rule for racing is don't do anything on race day. And so many people were doing something new on race day because they are like riding prototypes that they are not necessarily used to. Maybe they've been riding a week before the race. So I did try actually different foils, different setups. And ultimately I fell back to what I knew. And I felt like it was a really good call again, because it was interesting. I knew some people were riding much smaller foils than me. I mean, like all the top guys are riding like much smaller foils, except for Kane actually. But some people that were like along, like in my level, and we finished in the same time. So it's sometimes smaller foil is not necessarily like faster, and that proved it again. And then in terms of birds, yeah. I was riding a KT, the new Dragonfly Hollow, super lightweight, you know, really fast bird to take off, and it was perfect.
I've heard that the entrance towards the finishing line is also part of the tactics. Is it hard to find the entrance, or you see them well and then you just go for the one that you feel like is the best? There was some pumping involved as well, as far as I've heard. Is that true? Did you pump a lot at the end?
I mean, during the entire race, like if you want to race, you know, no matter the conditions, you have to pump a lot. It's racing, you have to pump, you know, whether the conditions are good or not. And toward the end, to find the finish line, you mean?
Yeah.
So to me, again, because I had never done it, I was really like trying to find it, and trying to figure out, you know, where is it? Am I in the right spot? So as you know, as we get closer, and also like the shore, like I had never really seen it, so it's not like you have like any marker on shore that is indicating like you are getting close, you know this is where you should be pointing, but as we get closer, it's kind of like a funnel, so you know it, you start seeing more people because everybody is like coming kind of like together. So that's how I found the finish line, is like as I was seeing more people next to me, I was like, okay, we are getting close and I'm on the right path for the finish line. And then maybe a kilometer before or something, then you start seeing, you know, the buoy, the boats, and then you know, like, okay, you know, now I have a visual on the finish line, and it's good. But there was bumps all the way, I would say, in terms of like finishing. It was easy. Like if you didn't want to push, you could be very comfortable during the entire race. There was bumps to ride, but of course it's a race, so you are, you know, still pumping, always trying to, you know, overtake, you know, one bump at a time, that was the race. But to be, you know, like what makes the difference between the times, in my opinion, is you know, how well you like your line was in between bumps. To me, like that's the number one factor that makes you faster or not. The the physical component doesn't, and the pumping technique or whatever, I mean, at that level everybody pumps well, you know, but if you are like the most physical person and you have the best pumping technique, but you pump in the wrong spot, you are slower.
And that's good. Yeah. That's good, because if not, so, you can just go jogging or something.
So it's all, are you in the right spot? You know, because someone could finish way ahead of you with no pumping, just cruising, if they are in the right spot. And you are in the wrong spot, but you are like working so hard, you're still slower. So it's, yeah.
That's super cool. Did you have some time like in between the islands to appreciate where you were, what you were doing, or were you just looking where you are and chasing the next bump?
I was definitely like, because I was in a bit of like more like a comfortable zone during the race, I definitely was like appreciating the experience like more, and you know, still able to like, you know, kind of like look around and be aware of like, wow, this is really cool. I'm going from one island to the other. So like that was my first, you know, time. And so I kind of like, I wanted it that way. I wanted to make sure that I can enjoy it and I'm not just like, you know, pushing and not really like looking around, you know.
Is there anything you would change for next year?
You know, if anything, I would, you know, if possible, like I would spend more time like there, like riding, you know, riding in those conditions. To me, local knowledge is a massive part of the success of, you know, how successful your race is going to be. So, yeah, spending more time there would be, you know, how I would like to do it for next time.
First, maybe let's talk about that pairing. Because on my Instagram, you were not on my Instagram anymore. And like, oh, maybe he stopped doing videos. Then this Paia video came out. They're like, oh, he's back. Or maybe you weren't away.
Oh, yeah.
Didn't show it on my stream.
Yeah,
my streams.
So I mean, I would say for me, one, in terms of content, like I'm not on the schedule. Like, I only post content if I feel like I have something new and exciting to share. You know, I post on, you know, stories, you know, on a regular basis, but in terms of like posting for sure, like I have no schedule. So, you know, sometimes maybe there is a month, you know, between two posts, you know, in this case with the Paia. So I was, you know, I was in Maui and I met up with Greg from BIM. He invited me for dinner and then during dinner, you know, we were chatting and he said like, well, you know, we have a new product we would love for you to ride. And I was like, kind of like blown away first because I was like the three models, you know, from BIM just came out. Like, I feel like not too long ago.
Yeah.
And I was like, a new one, like that, I mean, it's moving so fast. And then two, also, I had never, like, nobody knew about it. That I was like also blown away that there was not a hint out there that something was coming. And he said, you know, we would love for you to write it. And pretty much it's coming out in a week, you know, like I was like, dang, okay. Things are like moving, you know, insanely fast. And he said, like, it's a double skin. And also, you know, at first in my mind, I was like, a double skin? Like, that's weird. Like, one, I felt like it was like not in line with BIM in a way, like, because BIM is all about like minimalist. And I was like, double skin seems like more than minimalist, you know. But, you know, he was like, you know, you got to try it. And, yeah, I would say when I first got on it, it kind of like blew my mind for two reasons, the depower and the upwind ability. The depower, because on the power wing, I almost felt like when you were going upwind, it was always pretty physical. And so far, you know, I haven't been really using a harness when I power wing. And so it's all in your arms. And it goes upwind, but it's not comfortable to go upwind. So for me, if I had to go upwind, I would always go upwind a bit at a time. You know, I go upwind, I write down, I go upwind. And here, it felt so comfortable to hold because the depower is so amazing. And I was riding a bigger size. I was also blown away because when I rode it, it was maybe 25 miles per hour. If I was on my like single skin, I would probably be on the 3, on a 2.9, and still going upwind, I would be powered, you know? And there, he put me on a 3.8, on a 4.5, and I was like holding it no problem because the depower is amazing, but then it also having a bigger size helps going upwind. The other question I had was like, well, you know, for me, I really use the power wing to pack it up because... if I'm not packing it up, I'm winning, you know, and that's, to me, the power wing is so that I can pack it up and ride bumps. And so I was like, now, you know, the problem is double skin, you know, is it going to be like when I pack it up, is it going to be like a full like balloon, like full of air, and it's like takes like forever to like pack. And it wasn't like, I found that like the, like storing the power wing was the exact same process. It was as easy. The only major difference was that for sure it's more material. So when you put it in your belt, it takes more space. And so that's the major difference. But that aspect, you know, so in a way, like storing it, like it just takes you a few extra seconds to stuff it in your belt, especially because I feel like the behind belt is not like that big. I think they need to work on like a bigger one, but so it was just taking me a few extra seconds to stuff it in the belt. And then other than that, we are back to the same thing. Once it's in the belt, you don't really feel the difference, in volume and in weight. I mean, it's so minimal. So then you are riding freely.
But bar is bigger than the Kanaha, isn't it?
It's a bit bigger. It's a bit bigger.
Does it have the webbing on as well? Because the Kanaha bar is amazing.
Yeah, it's the same. It's the same.
Okay.
It's the same. Nice. It's the same bar, same like kind of like small, like smooth grip on it, but it's a bit longer. But if nobody would have like told me it was a bit longer, I don't know if I would have like, it would have like been obvious. You know, it's not that, you don't notice it that much. But, you know, now, and I've posted the review of it.
Yeah, I saw that.
So people can watch it. But, you know, now I almost wish like, you know, I wish YouTube would let you like, edit or like, you know, modify it or whatever, because I have new things.
You can add whatever you feel like now.
Well, you know, we did a demo in Hood River, so we put a lot of people on it, and that was interesting to me, you know, because not everybody has the same experience. So the review that I did was based on my experience, and I feel like, you know, I wish I would have been able to add the element of like what I've seen from other people's experience, which, you know, I feel like ultimately the Paella is, or people found it maybe a bit more technical to ride, in a way that like it flies differently than a single skin. And when you come from, you know, riding a single skin, and if you apply the same technique, you might struggle a bit. So the double skin like Paella is a bit more like, you need a bit more finesse to fly it. It's maybe not as like forgiving, where the single skin you can really do things wrong and it's still gonna handle it.
Especially the BRMs.
Yeah. So that was the major difference. I adapted to the double skin very quickly, so I kind of like, it didn't, I didn't really notice it. Like, it took me, you know, 2 minutes to be like, okay, you know, this is how it flies. But some people, you know, are maybe not figuring out as quickly. So basically, like, you know, it can take a bit longer, like, adaptation, like, you know, learning curve. And ultimately, you want to be a bit, you know, more, careful with how you fly it, you know, not like overfly it, especially when you are like getting up. You know, you don't want to pump it too hard. Like at the beginning, if you pump your power wing too hard, you're gonna get less out of it, because the single skin really likes to sit back, and so when you crank on the back lines, it sits back, it's right in the power, like power zone in your wind window, and it's giving you so much grunt. And the double skin really wants to fly forward. If you move it back too much, you make it stall and the power disappears. Yeah. So that's a major difference. And so people were always finding like, I don't have the power to get up. And it's not necessarily because it doesn't have the power to get up. It's because you are choking it and it's not giving you the power.
Is it more leg work than arm work, even more than the regular power wings?
Huh?
Is it more leg work than arm work, more than the single skins?
Yeah, it's you kind of like want to let it fly, and you don't want to overfly it, and you know, you do the rest with your pumping. So if you have a good pumping technique, it's going to be really useful. And the major thing also with, you know, when we had a lot of people demoing it, that we found there was a huge like correlation between board size and success, regardless of skill level, actually. Everybody on less than 60 liters was struggling, and everybody, you know, more than 60, like more like 70, 80, 90 was thriving. And for me, you know, I had been riding a 50 liter board for power winning, and it really made me rethink my board choice. Because I feel like, you know, having a bigger board is really gonna extend the range of your power wing. So if you have a board that's too small, you are eating up your range. So now your range is much smaller because you are already starting in the top of your power wing range. And having a small, and that applies to, you know, also any power wing model, you know, it's the same principle. But I felt like the benefit of the Paya is its range. And so when you can fully use it, you know, you get the maximum benefit. So having a bigger bone is a pretty important part of it.
Have you used the Flysurf for POW yet? Have you tried that?
I have not.
Because this is the one that has like very long lines. The 4.2 has 2 meter and 15 centimeters of lines. And I had what you just said felt kind of or sounded similar because I had to say when I made a mistake, the power wing went back and then to the front again. And as the lines are longer, it took a longer way. So every mistake I made, I paid for it even more than the shorter ones. So kind of sounds a little similar, even though the lines are shorter. My next question is, are you going to like ditch your single skins now for the double skin?
So to me, the only, and you know, I mean, and people have commented on my videos, like you said that last time and now you say something different. Yes, like I'm saying that today and maybe I say something else later when a new product comes in, you know, because like
sure.
we are like everything is evolving. So
yeah,
what I'm going to say now, it might be different than I said before and it might be different than what I'm going to say later, like next time. But to me, the single skin, I would only use a single skin if I'm downwinding and I'm shuttling with a car. So I'm only going downwind. That's the only reason I would use a single skin. If I have to go upwind, to me, the benefit of the double skin, or at least, you know, the Paya, is massive. And so on my last trip to Hood River, I did like a lot of downwinders and I didn't shuttle. I always went upwind, you know, on my own with the power wing, and I found that it was quicker than doing a shuttle with a car. Even though in Hood River, the road is right next to the river, it's so easy to shuttle. And I was still, you know, quicker because, you know, when you count like loading up your shuttle, you know, making sure, you know, everybody's there, unloading, getting in the water, finishing, waiting for everybody to arrive, loading again. I was so much quicker going up and down on my own. In this way, and there's a lot of like, I'm excited because even like, you know, where I am in Idaho, nobody really downwinds. The road is really like not right next to the lake. So it's like, it takes a really long time to do a downwind there. A lot of logistic. So now for me, it's literally a game changer. And that's what I'm going to be riding because I would rather have the small downside of extra size in my belt and massive like benefit, you know, like and time saving going upwind and energy saving going upwind and then not have to shuttle.
And you, even if you do long upwinders, you would not use a harness with that double skin. That's impressive.
Yeah. Well, so I did, you know, when I was in Hood River, I did like five like downwinders. And after three, I was like, I need a harness.
Okay.
So
okay,
it depends, you know, still how long you go. You know, ultimately now I actually like, now that I'm like kind of like enjoying going upwind with the power wing, where before I was like, yeah, I can do it, but it's, you know, I'm not necessarily enjoying it right now. I'm enjoying it. And so now I'm like adding a harness, you know, can only make it even more comfortable. So the first three downwinders that I did when I was in Hood River were like no harness and it was fine. But by the end of the third one, I was definitely like feeling it in my arms. Then I put a harness and I was like, okay, now I get to the top and I'm not even tired. Like my heart rate was like so low, I was rested, you know. So now, yes, like a harness, you know, I guess it's always been a good idea, but for me, it just clicked.
Awesome. And it doesn't take much space. It's not that you ding your board with this plastic hooks. It's really no problem. That is so cool. Maybe we can get into what you do other than foiling. And I saw some of your videos, paragliding. Did you start that just a couple of months ago or did you start that long ago?
Yeah. So, you know, basically because I, you know, spent some time, you know, I live in Idaho. There's not that much riding in Idaho. So I kind of like wanted to find something different than foiling, you know, that would be maybe a bit more suitable for where I live. So I wanted to learn how to paraglide. I went to the Alps in Chamonix, took a paragliding course. That was couple months ago. A month ago actually. And what's really interesting is, you know, actually I learned a lot, you know, that is helpful for the parawing. And like, you know, the double skin even more, you know, like in comparison to a paraglider, there's a lot of like similarities. It's so similar in so many ways. Also, you know, going upwind and enjoying riding down. It's the same thing when I'm like paragliding here, I'm hiking up. We can almost call that like the upwind, you know, and it's work. And you get to the top and now you start the fun part. You go down, you know, you go downwind. So it's kind of like the same process, but on land and with a tool that has so many similarities with the parawing and also the foil, in terms of like, you know, your glide and your, you know, all of those stuff is very similar. So yeah, pretty stoked. I mean, I would say, you know, maybe like the paragliding is a bit higher consequence than the parawing.
So, you could say that.
So ideally, you know, you don't learn by making mistakes. You know, you learn before and then you try not to make mistakes. So that's kind of like the process that I'm going through. And I'm still like, you know, really new to it because like paragliding, because it's high consequence, you really don't want to burn steps. And you know, you want to take your time and you are going to be a beginner for a very long time. So I'm still a brand new beginner, and trying not to burn the steps.
So I guess your knowledge of kites and parawings helped you with the whole paragliding, as well.
For sure. I mean, you know, all the feelings, the finesse that you get from flying a kite, from flying a parawing, it all translates. So I feel like for me, learning to paraglide was like, all of that was massively, you know, helpful. And I was able to like right away feel more of what was going on and adjust to that. Where a lot of people, when you learn to paraglide, you kind of like, you don't know what's going on. You don't feel, you are just trying to do what you are being told and what you are supposed to do, you know? So that's been, you know, like for sure, like really, really helpful. And I feel like it helps me both ways, you know, like, you know, my wind sport foiling experience has helped me paragliding, learn paragliding. But then the other way too, like, you know, what I'm like figuring out learning to paraglide is helping me also in my powering journey. And yeah,
that makes a lot of sense. What's next for you in the next couple of months? What are you up to?
You know, I've been moving quite a bit, so you know, I'm gonna try not to travel too much. I mean, I'm gonna go to Hood River a lot because that's close enough for me to go to, but ideally, you know, not you know, less travel for now. And then really my next travel is going to be to France. One to visit my family in October, but also there is a couple races, win races in France in October in
Croissant.
And then south of France in Saint-Tropez. So nice. That's the plan. A lot of people are going to be there. So again, it's going to be this like friends meetup and a fun ride. And so that's what's next. Yeah. In terms of like, you know, competing for me, I mean, I really like, you know, take it as like a fun experience. I have, you know, just like no chance of winning. So that's not going to be, you know, on my radar. But it's more like, yeah, going there, enjoy, ride with everybody, and be part of the community.
That is so cool because the community is awesome. And I just wanted to ask, well, first of all, I wish you better conditions in Croissant than last year. That's really what I wish for you. And I'm looking forward because you're probably going to do the pump full races as well. I remember that you talked about that turn, people accelerating out of the turns, and I'm trying to do tighter turns as well. Not that easy. But I talked with Freddie and Liam from the Generic Foiling podcast. They two things they said. First, I need like a feature. And one of the features they actually suggested is the want of the week. And that's the first time we're doing it. So is there anything that week that you really wanted that like, I need that? Is there anything?
During what week?
Well, can be the last week or for the next week. Like, it can be gear, it can be being somewhere, it can be something that you think, like, I want that.
I mean, I want win. You know, right now I'm looking at the forecast and I'm not going to have any win for a week. So I want win really bad. Otherwise, I'm like, really, you know, especially coming back from the races in Hawaii, you know, saw a lot of prototypes and I'm pretty excited. And I really want the new foils that everybody's working on. And so I would say that's probably, I want win and I want the new fancy foils.
Nice. So the next step in foils. When I was in Siloplano a couple of weeks ago, I used the Momentum, don't know which one, but yeah. It was impressive how such a small foil has such high lift and it was super fast, which was really exciting. So I can see where he got that from. And the second thing is, because I'm always thinking who can be interesting for the podcast. And we've talked as well with Freddie and Liam that it would be super cool to have Patrice Gonolé on the podcast, but he's like hard to get. And they also asked like who should interview him. And we came to the conclusion that you would probably be the best one. A, because you're super foiler, you're a very likable guy. You're also French. Would that be something that you would do?
Yeah, I mean, for sure, that could be interesting. You know, I've definitely been like inspired by his journey. You know, he really like started from nothing and got to where he is on his own. And so he's definitely an inspiring person, like his journey and everything. So yeah, that would be interesting.
So I would write them again and would suggest that you and me would do a podcast with him. Would you be up for that?
Yeah, let's do it.
Awesome. All right. Maybe that helps. Well, man, is there anything else, Gwen, you want to tell the world?
I mean, I would say, you know, since our last conversation, like, I feel like the powering was, I don't know if I was like that as into the powering as I was like in our last conversation, but to me, I feel like the powering now has really, you know, been taking over. I went to Hood River like last week again, and I show up there and I'm still doing some time, you know, with the paddle, but I was blown away. Everybody, I was the only one with the paddle. Everybody had transitioned to the powering. And from, you know, like I feel like at the beginning, the paddling was like maybe seen as like something to for people that can't use the paddle, then they use the paddling. And now it's everybody. Like, everybody that knows how to use the paddle is also on the paddling. So I would say for anyone listening, if you are on the fence about the paddling, the benefit, whether you are new to downwinding or whether you are really experienced at downwinding, it's opening, you know, some like amazing opportunities to ride differently. And so I'm all in on the paddling, and I feel like everybody should definitely consider it if they, you know, they are listening to this and they are like still on the fence.
All right. That is amazing. Thank you very much, Gwen, for coming back on the show. Super cool. I'm going to keep you posted for Gong and Patrice, and for all the listeners. The next episode is going to be with Nico Hopp from Hoppline. You've maybe seen him on Instagram. He was about to come on a little earlier, but he has a lot of things on his mind and doing a lot of different things. So he's going to come on eventually. Thanks, Gwen, for coming back on, and hope to see you on the water sometime, really.
Yeah, thank you.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
See you.